I thought I might catch you before you turned in. Any particular reason? Because I liked looking at you? His smile faded as he stared at her. What's wrong, Eve? Where do you want me to start, she thought, but shrugged. Long day. Ending with one of your other tenants here, croaking in his late-night snack. He went face down in a custard pie. There are worse ways to go, I suppose. He turned his head, murmured to someone nearby. Eve saw a woman move briskly behind Rourke and out of view. I've just dismissed my assistant, he explained. I wanted to be alone when I asked if you're wearing anything under that sheet. She glanced down, lifted a brow. Doesn't look like it. Why don't you take it off? No way I'm going to satisfy your purient urges by inner space transmission, Rourke. Use your imagination. I am. I'm imagining what I'm going to do to you the next time I get my hands on you. I advise you to rest up, Lieutenant. She wanted to smile and couldn't. Rourke, we're going to have to talk when you get back. We can do that as well. I've always found conversations with you stimulating, Eve. Get some sleep. Yeah, I will. See you, Rourke. Think of me, Eve. He ended the transmission, then sat alone, brooding at the blank monitor. There'd been something in her eyes, he thought. He knew the moods of them now, could see beyond the training into the emotion. The something had been worry. Turning his chair, he looked out at his view of star-splattered space. She was too far away for him to do any more than wonder about her. And to ask himself again, why she mattered so much. Chapter 13. Eve studied the report of the bank search for Sharon de Blas's deposit box with frustration. No record, no record, no record. Nothing in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Nothing in East Washington or Virginia. She had rented one somewhere, Eve thought. She'd had diaries and had kept them tucked away someplace where she could get to them safely and quickly. In those diaries, Eve was convinced, was a motive for murder. Unwilling to tag Feeney for another, broader search, she began one herself, starting with Pennsylvania, working west and north toward the borders of Canada and Quebec. In slightly less than twice the time it would have taken Feeney, she came up blank again. Then, working south, she struck out with Maryland and down to Florida. Her machine began to chug noisily at the work. Eve issued a warning snarl and a sharp bump to the console. She swore she'd risk the morass of requisition for a new unit if this one just held out for one more case. More from stubbornness than hope, she did a scan of the Midwest, heading toward the Rockies. You were too smart, Sharon, Eve thought as the negative results flickered by. Too smart for your own good. You wouldn't have gone out of the country or off planet where you'd have to go through a customs scan every trip. Why go far away? Someplace where you'd need transport or travel docs. You might want immediate access. If your mother knew you kept diaries, maybe other people knew it too. You bragged about it because you liked to make people uncomfortable, and you knew they were safely tucked away. But close, damn it, Eve thought, closing her eyes to bring the woman she was coming to know so well into full focus. Close enough so you could feel the power, use it, toy with people. But not so simple that just anyone could track it down, gain access, spoil the game. You used an alias. Rented your safe box under another name, just in case, and if you were smart enough to use an alias, you'd have used one that was basic, that was familiar, one you wouldn't have to hassle over. It was so simple, Eve realized, as she keyed in Sharon Barrister. So simple, both she and Feeney had overlooked it. She hit pay dirt at the Brinkstone International Bank and Finance, Newark, New Jersey. Sharon Barrister not only had a safe deposit box, she had a brokerage account in the amount of $326,000.85. Grinning at the screen, she hit her tie-in with a PA. "I need a warrant," she announced. 3 hours later, she was back in Commander Whitney's office, trying not to gnash her teeth. "She's got another one somewhere," Eve insisted, "and the diaries are in it."
"Nobody's stopping you from looking for it, Dallas."
"Fine, that's fine." She whirled around the office as she spoke. Energy was pumping now, and she wanted action. "What are we going to do about this?" She jerked a hand at the file on his desk. "You've got the disk I took from the safe deposit box, and the printout I ran. It's right there, Commander. A blackmail list. Names and amounts. And Simpson's name is there, in tidy alphabetical order."
"I can read, Dallas."
He resisted the urge to rub at the tension gathering at the base of his skull.
"The chief isn't the only person named Simpson in the city, much less the country."
"It's him." She was fuming, and there was no place to put the steam. "We both know it. There are a number of other interesting names there, too. A governor, a Catholic bishop, a respected leader of the International Organization of Women, 2 high-ranking cops, an ex-vice president."
"I'm aware of the names," Whitney interrupted. "Are you aware of your position, Dallas, and the consequences?"
He held up a hand to silence her.
"A few neat columns of names and numbers don't mean squat. This data gets out of this office and it's over. You're finished, and so's the investigation. Is that what you want?"
"No, sir."
"You get the diaries, Dallas. Find the connection between Sharon DeBlas and Lola Starr, and we'll see where we go from there."
"Simpson's dirty." Eve leaned over the desk. "He knew Sharon DeBlas. He was being blackmailed. And he's doing everything he can to undermine the investigation."
"Then we'll have to work around him, won't we?"
Whitney put the file in his lockbox.
"No one knows what we have in here, Dallas. Not even Feeney. Is that clear?"
"Yes, sir." Knowing she had to be satisfied with that, she started for the door. "Commander, I'd like to point out that there's a name absent from that list."
"Rourke's not on it."
Whitney met her eyes, nodded.
"As I said, Dallas, I can read."
Her message light was blinking when she got back to her office. A check of her email turned up 2 calls from the medical examiner. Impatiently, Eve put the hot lead aside and returned the call.
"Finished running the tests on your neighbor, Dallas. You hit the bullseye."
"Oh, hell." She ran her hands over her face. "Sent through the results. I'll take it from here." Hedda Feinstein opened her door with a puff of lavender sachet and the yeasty smell of homemade bread.
"Lieutenant Dallas."
She smiled her quiet smile and stepped back in invitation. Inside, the viewing screen was tuned to a chatty talk show where interested members of the home audience could plug in and shoot their holographic images to the studio for fuller interaction. The topic seemed to be higher state salaries for professional mothers. Just now, the screen was crowded with women and children of varying sizes and vocal opinions.
"How nice of you to come by. I've had so many visitors today. It's a comfort. Would you like some cookies?"
"Sure," Eve agreed, and felt like slime.
"Thanks." She sat on the couch, let her eyes scan the tidy little apartment. "You and Mr. Feinstein used to run a bakery."
"Oh, yes."
Henrietta's voice carried from the kitchen, along with her bustling movements.
"Until just a few years ago. We did very well. People love real cooking, you know. And if I do say so myself, I have quite a hand with pies and cakes."
"You do a lot of baking here, at home." Hedda came in with a tray of golden cookies.
"One of my pleasures. Too many people never know the joy of a home-baked cookie. So many children never experience real sugar. It's hideously expensive, of course, but worth it."
Eve sampled a cookie and had to agree. "I guess you must have baked the pie your husband was eating when he died."
"You won't find store-bought or simulations in my house," Hedda said proudly. "Of course, Joe would gobble everything up almost as soon as I took it out of the oven. There's not an auto chef on the market as reliable as a good baker's instincts and creativity."
"You did bake the pie, Mrs. Feinstein." The woman blinked.
lowered her lashes. Yes, I did.
Mrs. Feinstein, you know what killed your husband.
Yes, I do.
She smiled softly.
Gluttony. I told him not to eat it. I specifically told him not to eat it. I said it was for Mrs. Hennessy across the hall.
Mrs. Hennessy? That jolted Eve back several mental paces.
You... Of course I knew he did it anyway. He was very selfish that way.
Eve cleared her throat. Could we, turn the program off?
Hmm? Oh, I'm sorry.
The flustered hostess tapped her cheeks with her hands.
That's so rude. I'm so used to letting it play all day, I didn't even notice it. Screen off.
And the audio, Eve said patiently.
Of course.
Shaking her head as the sound continued to run, Hedda looked sheepish.
I've just never gotten the hang of the thing since we switched from remote to voice. Sound off, please.
There, that's better, isn't it? The woman could bake a poison pie, but she couldn't control her own television, Eve thought. It took all kinds. Mrs. Feinstein, I don't want you to say any more until I've read you your rights. Until you're sure you understand them. You're under no obligations to make any statement, Eve began, while Hedda continued to smile gently. Hedda waited until the recitation was over.
I didn't expect to get away with it. Not really.
Get away with what, Mrs. Feinstein?
Poisoning Joe. Although,
she pursed her lips like a child.
My grandson's a lawyer, a very clever boy. I think he'd say that since I did tell Joe, very specifically told him not to eat that pie, it was more Joe's doing than mine.
In any case, she said, and waited patiently. Mrs. Feinstein, are you telling me that you added synthetic cyanide compound to a custard pie with the intention of killing your husband?
No, dear. I'm telling you, I added cyanide compound with a nice dose of extra sugar to a pie and told my husband not to touch it. Joe, I said, don't you so much as sniff this custard pie. I baked it special and it's not for you. You hear me, Joe?
Hedda smiled again.
He said he heard me all right. And then just before I left for my evening with the girls, I told him again, just to be sure. I meant it, Joe. You let that pie be.
I expected he would eat it, though. But that was up to him, wasn't it?
Let me tell you about Joe, she continued conversationally, and picked up the cookie tray to urge another on Eve.
When Eve hesitated, she laughed gaily.
Oh, dear, these are quite safe, I promise you. I just gave a dozen to the nice little boy upstairs.
To prove her point, she chose one herself and bit in.
Now, where was I? Oh, yes, about Joe. He's my second husband, you know. We've been married 50 years come April. He was a good partner and quite a fine baker himself. Some men should never retire. The last few years he's been very hard to live with, cross and complaining all the time. Forever finding fault, and never would get flour on his fingers. Not that he'd pass by an almond tart without gobbling it down.
Because it sounded almost reasonable, Eve waited a moment. Mrs. Feinstein, you poisoned him because he ate too much?
Hedda's rosy cheeks rounded. It does seem that way, but it goes deeper. You're so young, dear, and you don't have family, do you?
No.
Families are a source of comfort and a source of irritation. No one outside can ever understand what goes on in the privacy of a home. Joe wasn't an easy man to live with, and I'm afraid, though I'm sorry to speak ill of the dead, that he had developed bad habits. He'd find a real glee in upsetting me, in ruining my small pleasures. Why, just last month he deliberately ate half the tower of pleasure cake I'd baked for the International Betty Crocker Bake Off. Then he told me it was dry.
Her voice huffed out an obvious insult. Can you imagine?
No, Eve said weakly. I can't. Well, he did it just to make me mad. It was the way he wielded power, you see. So I baked the pie, told him not to touch it, and went out to play mahjong with the girls. I wasn't at all surprised when I got back and found he hadn't listened. He was a glutton, you see. She gestured with the cookie before delicately finishing the last bite. That's one of the seven deadly sins, gluttony. It just seemed right that he would die by sin. Are you sure you won't have another cookie?
The world was certainly a mad place, Eve decided, when old women poisoned custard pies. And, she thought, with Hedda's quiet, old-fashioned, grandmotherly demeanor, the woman would probably get off. If they sent her up, she'd get kitchen duty and happily bake pastries for the other inmates. Eve filed her report, caught a quick dinner at the eatery, then went back to work on the still-simmering lead. She'd no more than cleared half the New York banks when the call came through.
Yeah, Dallas.
Her answer was the image that flowed onto her screen. A dead woman, arranged all too familiarly on blood-soaked sheets. 3 of 6. She stared at the message imposed over the body and snarled at her computer. Trace address, now, goddammit! After the computer obliged, she tagged dispatch. Dallas, Lieutenant Eve, ID 5347BQ, Priority A. Any available units to 156 West 89th, apartment 2119. Do not enter premises. Repeat, do not enter premises. Detain any and all persons exiting building. Nobody goes in that apartment, uniform or civilian. My ETA, 10 minutes.
Copy, Dallas, Lieutenant Eve.
The droid on duty spoke coolly and without rush.
Units 50 and 36 available to respond. Will await your arrival. Priority A, dispatch out.
She grabbed her bag and her field kit and was gone. Eve entered the apartment alone, weapon out and ready. The living room was tidy, even homey with its thick cushions and fringed area rugs. There was a book on the sofa and a slight dip in the cushion, indicating someone had spent some time curled up and reading. Frowning over the image, she moved to a door beyond. The small room was set up as an office, the workstation tidy as a pin. With little hints of personality in the basket of perfumed silk flowers, the bowl of colorful gumdrops, the shiny white mug decorated with a glossy red heart. The workstation faced the window. The window faced the sheer side of another building. But no one had bothered with a privacy screen. Lining one wall was a clear shelf holding several more books, a large drop box for discs, another for e-memos, a small treasure trove of pricey graphite pencils and recycled legal pads. Cuddled between was a lopsided baked clay blob that might have been a horse and had certainly been made by a child. Eve turned out of the room and opened the opposing door. She knew what to expect. Her system didn't revolt. The blood was still very fresh. With only a small sigh, she holstered her weapon, knowing she was alone with the dead. Through the thin protective spray on her hands, she felt the body. It hadn't had time to cool. She'd been positioned on the bed, and the weapon had been placed neatly between her legs. Eve pegged it as a Ruger P-90, a sleek combat weapon popular as home defense during the urban revolt, light, compact, and fully automatic. No silencer this time, but she'd be willing to bet the bedroom was soundproofed and that the killer had known it. She moved over to the fussily female circular dresser, opened a small burlap bag that was currently a fashion rage. Inside, she found the dead woman's companion's license. Pretty woman, she mused. Nice smile. Direct eyes. Really stunning coffee and cream complexion. Georgie Castle, Eve recited for the record. Female, age 53, licensed companion. Death probably occurred between 7 and 7:45 p.m. Cause of death, gunshot wounds, ME to confirm. 3 visible points of violence, forehead, mid-chest, genitalia. Most likely induced with antique combat-style handgun left at scene. No signs of struggle, no appearance of forced entry or robbery. A whisper of a sound behind her had Eve whipping out her weapon. Crouched, eyes hard and cold, she stared at a fat gray cat who slid into the room. Jesus, where'd you come from? She let out a long, cleansing breath as she replaced her weapon. There's a cat, she added for the record, and when it blinked at her, flashing one gold and one green eye, she bent down to scoop it up. The purring sounded like a small, well-oiled engine. Shifting him, she took out her communicator and called for a homicide team. A short time later, Eve was in the kitchen, watching the cat sniff with delicate disdain at a bowl of food she'd unearthed when she'd heard the raised voices outside the apartment door. When she went to investigate, she found the uniform she'd posted trying to restrain a frantic and very determined woman. "What's the problem here, officer?" "Lieutenant," with obvious relief, the uniform deferred to her superior. "The civilian demands entry. I was..." "Of course I demand entry!" The woman's dark red hair, cut in a perfect wedge, moved and settled around her face with each jerky movement. "This is my mother's home! I want to know what you're doing here!"
"And your mother is?" Eve prompted.
"Mrs. Castle! Mrs. Georgie Castle! Was there a break-in?" Anger turned to worry as she tried to squeeze past Eve. "Is she all right, Mom?"
"Come with me." Eve took a firm hold of her arm and steered her inside and into the kitchen. "What's your name?"
"Samantha Bennett."
The cat left his bowl and walked over to curl around and through Samantha's legs. In a gesture Eve recognized as habitual and automatic, Samantha bent to give the cat one quick scratch between the ears.
"Where's my mother?"
Now that the worry was heading toward fear, Samantha's voice cracked. There was no part of the job Eve dreaded more than this. No aspect of police work that scraped at her heart with such dull blades. "I'm sorry, Miss Bennett. I'm very sorry. Your mother's dead." Samantha said nothing. Her eyes, the same warm honey tone as her mother's, unfocused. Before she could fold, Eve eased her into a chair.
"There's a mistake," she managed. "There has to be a mistake. We're going to the movies. The 9 o'clock show. We always go to the movies on Tuesdays."
She stared up at Eve with desperately hopeful eyes.
"She can't be dead. She's barely 50 and she's healthy. She's strong."
"There's no mistake. I'm sorry."
"There was an accident?"
Those eyes filled now, flowed over.
"She had an accident?"
"It wasn't an accident. There was no way but one to get it down. Your mother was murdered."
"No, that's impossible."
The tears kept flowing. Her voice hitched over them as she continued to shake her head in denial.
"Everyone liked her. Everyone. No one would hurt her. I want to see her. I want to see her now."
"I can't let you do that."
"She's my mother."
Tears plopped on her lap even as her voice rose.
"I have the right. I want to see my mother."
Eve clamped both hands on Samantha's shoulders, forcing her back into the chair she'd sprung from. "You're not going to see her. It wouldn't help her. It wouldn't help you. What you're going to do is answer my questions, and that's going to help me find who did this to her. Now, do you want me to get you something? Call anyone for you?"
"No. No."
Samantha fumbled in her purse for a tissue.
"My husband. My children. I'll have to tell them. My father, how can I tell them?"
"Where is your father, Samantha?"
He lives in Westchester. They divorced about 2 years ago. He kept the house because she wanted to move into the city. She wanted to write books. She wanted to be a writer."
Eve turned to the filtered water unit on the counter, glugged out a glass, pressed it on Samantha. "Do you know how your mother made her living?"
"Yes."
Samantha pressed her lips together, crushed the damp tissue in her chilled fingers.
"No one could talk her out of it. She used to laugh and say it was time she did something shocking, and what wonderful research it was for her books. My mother..."
Samantha broke off to drink.
"She got married very young. A few years ago, she said she needed to move on, see what else there was. We couldn't talk her out of that either. You could never talk her out of anything."
She began to weep again, covering her face and sobbing silently. Eve took the barely touched glass, waited, let the first wave of grief and shock roll. Was it a difficult divorce? Was your father angry? Baffled. Confused. Sad. He wanted her back. And always said this was just one of her phases. The question behind the question abruptly struck her. She lowered her hands. He would never hurt her. Never, never, never. He loved her. Everyone did. You couldn't help it.
Okay. Eve would deal with that later.
You and your mother were close?
Yes, very close.
Did she ever talk to you about her clients?
Sometimes. It embarrassed me, but she'd find a way to make it all so outrageously funny. She could do that. Called herself Granny Sex, and you had to laugh.
Did she ever mention anyone who made her uneasy?
No. She could handle people. It was part of her charm. She was only going to do this until she was published.
Did she ever mention the name Sharon DeBlas or Lola Starr?
No.
Samantha started to drag her hair back. Then her hand froze in midair.
Starr? Lola Starr? I heard on the news. I heard about her. She was murdered. Oh, God. Oh, God!
She lowered her head and her hair fell in wings to shield her face. I'm going to have an officer take you home, Samantha.
I can't leave. I can't leave her.
Yes, you can. I'm going to take care of her. Eve laid her hands over Samantha's. I promise you, I'll take care of her for you. Come on now. Gently, she helped Samantha to her feet. She wrapped an arm around the distraught woman's waist as she led her to the door. She wanted her out before the team had finished in the bedroom. Is your husband home?
Yes. He's home with the children. We have 2 children. 2 years and 6 months. Tony's home with the children.
Good. What's your address? The shock was settling in. Eve hoped the numbness she could read on Samantha's face would help as the woman recited an upscale address in Westchester. Officer Banks?
Yes, Lieutenant.
Take Mrs. Bennett home. I'll call for another officer for the door. Stay with the family as long as you're needed.
Yes, sir.
With compassion, Banks guided Samantha toward the elevators.
This way, Mrs. Bennett, she murmured.
Samantha leaned drunkenly on Banks.
You'll take care of her.
Eve met Samantha's ravaged eyes. I promise. An hour later, Eve walked into the station house with a cat under her arm.
Hey there, Lieutenant! Caught yourself a cat burglar?
The desk sergeant snorted at his own humor.
You're a laugh riot, Riley.
Commander's still here?
He's waiting for you. You're to go on up as soon as you show.
He leaned forward to scratch the purring cat.
Hooked yourself another homicide?
Yeah. A kissing sound had her glancing over at a leering hunk in a spandex jumpsuit. The jumpsuit and the blood trickling at the side of his mouth were approximately the same color. His accessories were a set of thin black restraints that secured one arm to a nearby bench. He rubbed his crotch with his free hand and winked at her.
Hey, baby. Got something here for you.
Tell Commander Whitney I'm on my way, she told Riley as the desk sergeant rolled his eyes. Unable to resist, she swung by the bench, leaned close enough to smell sour vomit. That was a charming invitation, she murmured, then arched a brow when the man peeled open his fly patch and wagged his personality at her.
Oh, look, kitty. A teeny tiny little penis.
She smiled, leaned just a bit closer.
Better take care of it, asshole, or my pussy here might mistake it for a teeny tiny little mouse and bite it off.
It made her feel better to see what there was of his pride and joy shrivel before he closed his flaps. The good humor lasted almost until she stepped into the elevator and ordered Commander Whitney's floor. He was waiting with Feeney, and the report she'd transmitted directly from the crime scene. In the nature of the repetition required in police work, she went over the same ground verbally.
So that's the cat, Feeney said.
I didn't have the heart to dump him on the daughter in the state she was in. Eve shrugged. And I couldn't very well just leave him there. With her free hand, she reached into her bag. Her discs. Everything's labeled. I scanned through her appointments. The last one of the day was at 6:30. John Smith. The weapon. She laid the bagged weapon on Commander Whitney's desk. Looks like Ruger P-90. Feeney took a look, nodded.
You're learning, kid.
I've been boning up.
Early 21st, probably 08, 09,
Feeney stated as he turned the sealed weapon in his hands.
Prime condition.
Serial number's intact. Won't take long to run it, he added, but moved his shoulders.
But he's too smart to use it registered.
Run it, Whitney ordered, and gestured to the auxiliary unit across the room. I've got surveillance on your building, Dallas. If he tries to slip you another disc, we'll spot him.
If he stays true to form, it'll be within 24 hours. He's holding to the pattern so far, though each of his victims has been a distinctly different type. With de Blas, you've got the glitz, the sophistication. With Star, you've got fresh, childlike. And with this one, we've got comfort, still young, but mature. We're still interviewing neighbors, and I'm going to hit the family again, look into the divorce. It looks to me like she took this guy spur of the moment. She had a standing date with her daughter for Tuesdays. I'd like Feeney to run her link, see if he called her direct. We're not going to be able to keep this from the media, Commander, and they're going to hit us hard.
I'm already working on media control.
It may be hotter than we think.
Feeney looked up from the terminal. His eyes lingered on Eve's, made her blood chill.
The murder weapon's registered. Purchased through silent auction at Sotheby's last fall.
Rourke. Eve didn't speak for a moment. Didn't care.
It breaks pattern, she managed. And it's stupid. Rourke's not a stupid man.
Lieutenant,
it's a plant, Commander. An obvious one. A silent auction? Any second-rate hacker can use someone's ID and bid.
How is it paid for? She snapped at Feeney.
I'll need to access Sotheby's records after they open tomorrow.
My bet's cash, electronic transfer. The auction house gets the money. Why should they question it?
Her voice might have been calm, but her mind was racing.
And the delivery? Odds are electronic pickup station. You don't need ID for an EPS. All you do is key in the delivery code.
Dallas,
Whitney spoke patiently.
Pick him up for questioning.
I can't. His eyes remained level, cool.
That's a direct order. If you have a personal problem, save it for personal time.
I can't pick him up, she repeated. He's on the Freestar space station, a fair distance from the murder scene.
If he put out that he'd be on Freestar,
he didn't, she interrupted. And that's where the killer made a mistake. Rourke's trip is confidential, with only a few key people apprised. As far as it's generally known, he's right here in New York. Commander Whitney inclined his head.
Then we'd better check his whereabouts. Now.
Her stomach churned as she engaged Whitney's link. Within seconds, she was listening to Somerset's prune voice.
Somerset, Lieutenant Dallas. I have to contact Rourke.
Rourke is in meetings, Lieutenant. He can't be disturbed.
He told you to put me through, goddammit. This is police business. Give me his access number, or I'm coming over there and hauling your bony ass in for obstructing justice.
Somerset's face puckered up.
I am not authorized to give out that data. I will, however, transfer you. Please stand by.
Eve's palms began to sweat as the screen went to holding blue. She wondered whose idea it was to pipe in the sugary music. Certainly not Rourke's. He had too much class.
Oh, God, what was she going to do if he wasn't where he said he'd be?
The blue screen contracted into a pinpoint, then opened up. There was Rourke, a trace of impatience in his eyes, a half-smile on his mouth.
Lieutenant, you've caught me at a bad time. Can I get back to you?
No. She could see from the corner of her eye that Feeney was already tracing the transmission.
I need to verify your whereabouts.
My whereabouts?
His brow cocked. He must have seen something in her face, though Eve would have sworn she kept it as smooth and unreadable as stone. What's wrong, Eve? What's happened? Your whereabouts, Rourke, please verify.
He remained silent, studying her.
Eve heard someone speak to him. He flicked away the interruption with a dismissing gesture. I'm in the middle of a meeting in the presidential chamber of Station Freestar, the location of which is Quadrant 6, Slip Alpha. Scan, he ordered, and the intergalactic link circled the room. A dozen men and women sat at a wide circular table. The long bowed port showed a scatter of stars and the perfect blue-green globe of Earth.
Location of transmission confirmed, Feeney said in an undertone. He's just where he says he is.
Rourke, please switch to privacy mode. Without a flicker of expression, he lifted a headset.
Yes, Lieutenant.
A weapon registered to you was confiscated at a homicide. I have to ask you to come in for questioning at the first possible opportunity. You're free to bring your attorney. I'm advising you to bring your attorney, she added, hoping he understood the emphasis. If you don't comply within 48 hours, the station guard will escort you back on planet. Do you understand your rights and obligations in this matter?
Certainly.
I'll make arrangements. Goodbye, Lieutenant. The screen went blank. Chapter 14. More shaken than she cared to admit, Eve entered Dr. Mira's office the following morning. At Mira's invitation, she took a seat, folded her hands to keep them from any telltale, restless movements.
Have you had time to profile?
You requested urgent status. Indeed, Mira had been up most of the night, reading reports, using her training and her psych diagnostics to compose a profile.
I'd like more time to work on this, but I can give you an overall view.
Okay, Eve leaned forward. What is he?
He is almost certainly correct. Traditionally, crimes of this nature are not committed within the same sex. He's a man, above average intelligence, with sociopathic and voyeuristic tendencies. He's bold, but not a risk-taker, though he probably sees himself as such.
In her graceful way, she linked her fingers together, crossed her legs.
His crimes are well thought out. Whether or not he has sex with his victims is incidental. His pleasure and satisfaction comes from the selection, the preparation, and the execution.
Why prostitutes?
Control. Sex is control. Death is control. And he needs to control people, situations. The first murder was probably impulse.
Why?
He was caught off guard by the violence, his own capability of violence. He had a reaction, a jerk of a movement, the indrawn breath, the shaky exhale. He recovered, systematically protected himself. He doesn't want to be caught, but he wants, needs, to be admired, feared. Hence the recordings. He uses collector's weapons, she continued in that same moderate voice, a status symbol of money, again power and control. He leaves them behind so that they can show he's unique among men. He appreciates the overt violence of guns and the impersonal aspect of them. The kill from a comfortable distance, the aloofness of that. He's decided on the number he'll kill to show that he's organized, precise, ambitious.
Could he have had the six women in mind from the beginning? Six targets?
The only verified connection between the three victims is their profession, Mira began, and saw that Eve had already reached the same conclusion, but wanted it confirmed. He had the profession in mind. It would be my opinion the women are incidental. It's likely he holds a high-level position, certainly a responsible one. If he has a sexual or marriage partner, he or she is subservient. His opinion of women is low. He debases and humiliates them after death to show his disgust and his superiority. He doesn't perceive these as crimes, but as moments of personal power, personal statement. The prostitute, male or female, remains a profession of low esteem in many minds. Women are not his equals. A prostitute is beneath his contempt, even when he uses her for his own release. He enjoys his work, Lieutenant. He enjoys it very much.
Is it work, Doctor, or a mission?
He has no mission, only ambitions. It isn't religion, not a moral statement, not a societal stance.
No, the statement's personal. The stance is control.
I would agree, Mira said, pleased with the straightforward workings of Eve's mind. It is, to him, an interest, a new and somewhat fascinating hobby that he has discovered himself adept at. He's dangerous, Lieutenant, not simply because he has no conscience, but because he's good at what he does, and his success feeds him.
He'll stop at 6, Eve murmured. With this method. But he'll find another creative way to kill. He's too vain to go back on his word to the authorities, but he's enjoying his hobby too much to give it up.
Mira angled her head. One would think, Lieutenant, that you've already read my report. I believe you're coming to understand him very well.
Eve nodded. Yeah, piece by piece. There was a question she had to ask, one she had suffered over through a long, sleepless night. To protect himself, to make the game more difficult, would he hire someone, pay someone to kill a victim he'd chosen while he was alibied?
No.
Mira's eyes softened with compassion as she watched Eve's close in relief.
In my opinion, he needs to be there, to watch, to record, most of all, to experience. He doesn't want vicarious satisfaction, nor does he believe you'll outsmart him. He enjoys watching you sweat, Lieutenant. He's an observer of people, and I believe he focused on you the moment he learned you were primary. He studies you and knows you care. He sees that as a weakness to exploit, and does so by presenting you with the murders, not at your place of work, but where you live.
He sent the last disc. It was in my morning mail drop, posted from a midtown slot about an hour after the murder. We had my building under surveillance. He'd have figured that and found a way to get around it.
He's a born button pusher.
Mira handed Eve a disc and a hard copy of the initial profile.
He is an intelligent and a mature man. Mature enough to restrain his impulses. A man of means and imagination. He would rarely show his emotions, rarely have them to show. It's an intellect with him. And, as you said, vanity.
I appreciate you getting this for me so quickly.
Eve,
Mira said before Eve could rise,
there's an addendum. The weapon that was left at the last murder. The man who committed these crimes would not make so foolish a mistake to leave a traceable weapon behind. The diagnostic rejected it at a probability of 93.4%.
It was there, Eve said flatly. I bagged it myself.
As I'm sure he wanted you to. It's likely he enjoyed implicating someone else to further bog the system, twist the investigation process, and it's likely he chose this particular person to upset you, to distract you, even to hurt you. I've included that in the profile. Personally, I want to tell you that I'm concerned about his interest in you.
I'm going to see to it that he's a hell of a lot more concerned with my interest in him. Thank you, Doctor. Eve went directly to Whitney's office to deliver the psychiatric profile. With any luck at all, Feeney would have verified her suspicions about the purchase and delivery of the murder weapon. If she was right, and she had to believe she was, that, and the weight of Mira's profile, would clear Rourke. She already knew, by the way Rourke had looked at her, through her, during their last transmission, that her professional duties had destroyed whatever personal bridge they'd been building. She was only more sure of it when she was cleared into the office and found Rourke there. He must have used a private transport, she decided. It would have been impossible for him to have arrived so quickly through normal channels. He only inclined his head, said nothing, as she crossed to give Commander Whitney the disc and file. Dr. Mira's profile.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
His eyes shifted to Rourke's.
Lieutenant Dallas will show you to an interview area. We appreciate your cooperation.
Still, he said nothing, only rose and waited for Eve to go to the door. You're entitled to have your attorney present, she began as she called for an elevator.
I'm aware of that.
Am I being charged with any crime, Lieutenant?
No. Cursing him, she stepped inside, requested Area B. This is just standard procedure. His silence continued until she wanted to scream.
Damn it, I don't have a choice here.
Don't you? He murmured, and preceded her out of the car when the doors opened.
This is my job.
The doors of the interview area whisked open, then snapped closed behind them. The surveillance cameras any petty thief would know were hidden in every wall engaged automatically. Eve took a seat at a small table and waited for him to sit across from her. These proceedings are being recorded. Do you understand?
Yes.
Lieutenant Dallas, ID 5347BQ, interviewer, subject, Rourke. Initial date and time. Subject has waived the presence of an attorney, is that correct?
Yes, the subject has waived the presence of an attorney.
Are you acquainted with a licensed companion, Georgie Castle?
No.
Have you been to 156 West 89th Street?
No, I don't believe I have.
Do you own a Ruger P-90 automatic combat weapon circa 2005?
It's likely that I own a weapon of that make and era. I'd have to check to be certain, but for argument's sake, we'll say I do.
When did you purchase said weapon?
Again, I'd have to check.
He never blinked, never took his eyes from hers. I have an extensive collection and don't carry all the details of it in my head or in my pocket log.
Did you purchase said weapon at Sotheby's?
It's possible. I often add to my collection through auctions.
Silent auctions?
Occasionally. Her stomach, already knotted, began to roll.
Did you add to your collection with the aforesaid weapon at a silent auction at Sotheby's on October 2nd of last year?
Rourke slipped his log out of his pocket, skimmed back to the date.
No, I don't have a record of that. It seems I was in Tokyo on that date, engaged in meetings. You can verify that easily.
Damn you, she thought. You know that's no answer.
Representatives are often used in auctions.
They are. Watching her dispassionately, he tucked the log away again.
If you check with Sotheby's, you'll be told that I don't use representatives. When I decide to acquire something, it's because I've seen it. With my own eyes, gauged its worth to me. If and when I decide to bid, I do so personally. In a silent auction, I would either attend or participate by link.
Isn't it traditional to use a sealed electronic bid, or a representative authorized to go to a certain ceiling?
I don't worry about traditions overmuch. The fact is, I could change my mind as to whether I want something. For one reason or another, it could lose its appeal.
She understood the underlying meaning of his statement, tried to accept that he was done with her.
The aforesaid weapon, registered in your name and purchased through silent auction at Sotheby's in October of last year, was used to murder Georgie Castle at approximately 7:30 last evening.
You and I both know I wasn't in New York at 7:30 last evening.
His gaze skimmed over her face.
You traced the transmission, didn't you?
She didn't answer.
Couldn't.
Your weapon was found at the scene.
Have we established it was mine?
Who has access to your collection?
I do. Only I do.
Your staff?
No. If you'll recall, Lieutenant, my display cases are locked. Only I have the code.
Codes can be broken.
Unlikely, but possible, he agreed. However, unless my palm print is used for entry, any case that is opened by any means triggers an alarm.
God damn it, give me an opening, she thought. Couldn't he see she was pleading with him, trying to save him?
Alarms can be bypassed.
True.
When any case is opened without my authorization, all entry to the room is sealed off. There's no way to get out, and security is notified simultaneously.
I can assure you, Lieutenant, it's quite foolproof. I believe in protecting what's mine.
She glanced up as Feeney came in. He jerked his head, and she rose.
Excuse me.
When the doors shut behind them, he dipped his hands into his pockets.
You called it, Dallas. Electronic bid, cash deal, delivered to an EPS.
The head snoot at Sotheby's claims this was an unusual procedure for Rourke.
He always attends in person or by direct link. Never used this line before in the 15 years or so he's dealt with them.
She allowed herself one satisfied breath. That checks with Rourke's statement. What else?
Ran an undercheck on the registration. The Ruga only appeared on the books in Rourke's name a week ago. No way in hell we can pin it on him. The commander says to spring him.
She couldn't afford to be relieved. Not yet. And only nodded.
Thanks, Feeney.
She slipped back inside.
You're free to go.
He stood as she stepped backward through the open door.
Just like that?
We have no reason, at this time, to detain or inconvenience you any further.
Inconvenience?
He walked toward her until the doors snicked shut at his back.
Is that what you call this? An inconvenience?
He was, she told herself, entitled to his anger, to his bitterness. She was obliged to do her job. Three women are dead. Every possibility has to be explored.
And am I just one of your possibilities?
He reached out, the sudden violent movement of his hands closing over her shirt, surprising her.
Is that what it comes down to between us?
I'm a cop. I can't afford to overlook anything, to assume anything.
To trust, he interrupted, anything or anyone.
If it had leaned a little the other way, would you have locked me up? Would you have put me in a cage, Eve?
Back off!
Eyes blazing, Feeney strode down the corridor.
Back fucking off!
Leave us alone, Feeney.
Hell, I will.
Ignoring Eve, he shoved against Rourke.
Don't you come down on her, big shot. She went to bat for you, and the way things stand, it could have cost her her job. Simpson's already prepping her as a sacrificial lamb because she was dumb enough to sleep with you.
Shut up, Feeney.
God damn it, Dallas.
I said, shut up. Calm again, detached, she looked at Rourke. The department appreciates your cooperation, she said to Rourke, and, prying his hand from her shirt, turned and hurried off.
What the hell did you mean by that?
Rourke demanded.
Feeney only snorted. I got better things to do than waste my time on you.
Rourke backed him into a wall. You're going to be free to book me for assaulting an officer in about two breaths, Feeney.
Tell me what you meant about Simpson.
You want to know, big shot? Feeney looked around for a place of comparative privacy, jerked ahead toward the door of a men's room.
Come into my office, and I'll tell you.
She had the cat for company. Eve was already regretting the fact that she'd have to turn the useless, overweight feline over to Georgie's family. She should have done so already, but found solace in even a pitiful furball's worth of companionship. Nevertheless, she was nothing but irritated by the beep of her intercom. Human company was not welcomed, particularly as she checked her viewing screen. Rourke. She was raw enough to take the coward's way. Leaving the summons unanswered, she walked back to the couch, curled up with the cat. If she'd had a blanket handy, she'd have pulled it over her head. The sound of her locks disengaging moments later had her springing to her feet.
You son of a bitch, she said when Rourke walked in. You crossed too many lines.
He simply tucked his master code back in his pocket.
Why didn't you tell me?
I don't want to see you. She hated that her voice sounded desperate rather than angry.
Take a hint.
I don't like being used to hurt you.
You do fine on your own. You expect me to have no reaction when you accuse me of murder? When you believe it? I never believed it.
It came out in a hiss, a passionate whisper.
I never believed it, she repeated. But I put my personal feelings aside and did my job. Now get out!
She headed for the door. When he grabbed her, she swung out fast and hard. He didn't even attempt to block the blow. Calmly, he wiped the blood from his mouth with the back of his hand while she stood rigid, her breathing fast and audible.
Go ahead, he invited. Take another shot. You needn't worry. I don't hit women. Or murder them.
Just leave me alone. She turned away, gripped the back of the sofa where the cat sat eyeing her coolly. The emotions were welling up, threatening to fill her chest to bursting.
You're not going to make me feel guilty for doing what I had to do.
You sliced me in two, Eve. It infuriated him anew to admit it, to know she could so easily devastate him.
Couldn't you have told me you believed in me?
No. She squeezed her eyes tight.
God, don't you realize it would have been worse if I had? If Whitney couldn't believe I'd be objective, if Simpson even got a whiff that I showed you any degree of preferential treatment, it would have been worse. I couldn't have moved on the psych profile so fast, couldn't have put Feeney on a priority basis to check the trail of the weapon to eliminate probable cause.
I hadn't thought of that, he said quietly. I hadn't thought.
When he laid a hand on her shoulder, she shrugged it off, turned on him with blazing eyes. God damn it! I told you to bring an attorney! I told you! If Feeney hadn't hit the right buttons, they could have held you. You're only out because he did, and the profile didn't fit.
He touched her again. She jerked back again.
It appears I didn't need an attorney.
All I needed was you.
It doesn't matter.
She battled control back into place. It's done. The fact that you have an unassailable alibi for the time of the murder and that the gun was an obvious plant shifts the focus away from you.
She felt sick, unbearably tired. It may not eliminate you completely, but Dr. Mira's profiles are gold. Nobody overturns her diagnostics. She's eliminated you, and that carries a lot of weight with the department and the PA.
I wasn't worried about the department or the PA.
You should have been.
It seems you've worried enough for me.
I'm very sorry.
Forget it.
I've seen shadows under your eyes too often since I've known you.
He traced a thumb along them.
I don't like being responsible for the ones I see now. I'm responsible for myself. And I had nothing to do with putting your job in jeopardy.
Damn Feeney, she thought viciously. I make my own decisions. I pay my own consequences.
Not this time, he thought. Not alone.
The night after we'd been together, I called. I could see you were worried, but you brushed it off. Feeney told me exactly why you were worried that night. Your angry friend wanted to pay me back for making you unhappy.
He did.
Feeney had no right,
perhaps not.
He wouldn't have had to if you'd confided in me.
He took both her arms to stop her quick movement. Don't turn away from me, he warned, his voice low.
You're good at shutting people out, Eve, but it won't work with me.
What did you expect? That I'd come crying to you?
Rourke, you seduced me and now I'm in trouble. Help!
The hell with that. You didn't seduce me. I went to bed with you because I wanted to. Wanted to enough that I didn't think about ethics. I got slammed for it, and I'm handling it. I don't need help.
Don't want it, certainly.
Don't need it.
She wouldn't humiliate herself by struggling away now, but stood passive.
The commander's satisfied that you're not involved in the murders. You're clear. So other than what the department will officially term an error in judgment on my part, so am I. If I'd been wrong about you, it'd be different.
If you'd been wrong about me, it would have cost you your badge.
Yes. I'd have lost my badge.
I'd have lost everything.
I'd have deserved to. But it didn't happen, so it's over. Move on.
Do you really think I'm going to walk away?
It weakened her, that soft, gentle lilt that came into his voice.
I can't afford you, Rourke. I can't afford to get involved.
He stepped forward, laid his hands on the back of the couch, caged her in.
I can't afford you either.
It doesn't seem to matter.
Look, I'm sorry I hurt you, he murmured. Very sorry that I didn't trust you, then accused you of not trusting me.
I didn't expect you to think any differently, to act any differently.
That stung more than the blow to the face.
No, I'm sorry for that, too.
You risked a great deal for me.
Why?
There were no easy answers, Eve thought.
I believed you.
He pressed his lips to her brow.
Thank you.
It was a judgment call, she began, letting out a shaky breath when he touched his mouth to her cheek.
I'm going to stay with you tonight.
Then to her temple. I'm going to see that you sleep. Sex is